WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Our rock historian Ed Ward says that Motown's history is muddled by aggressively marketed nostalgia, poor reissues, and a general unwillingness to go beyond the big stars and the big hits. Ed says the label's second tier of artists, including Martha and the Vandellas, is worth checking out.
Martha Reeves owes her rise in the music business to her unstoppable ambition. Many a young girl would have meekly knuckled under to the Motown brass, but Martha knew she had what it took and fought on. She was born in Alabama. Her father was a preacher, and she and her brothers sang in his church in Detroit, where they'd moved in Martha's infancy. Her school teachers discovered her talent early on, and she sang with high school girlfriends, even scoring some backup work with Chess Records. After graduation, she was working at a dry cleaner's when she won a talent contest that got her a slot at Detroit's famous 20 Grand Club, and there she was spotted by Motown talent scout Mickey Stevenson, who insisted she come visit him at the office, which she did, without an appointment. Stevenson wasn't pleased, but while she was there, an emergency came up, and he told her to watch the phones while he was gone. An hour later, she'd organized things so well that Stevenson hired her as his secretary. Another accident resulted in Marvin Gaye showing up for a session without backup vocalists. So Martha recruited two of her girlfriends and saved the day. In gratitude, Berry Gordy, Motown's head, let them make a record, which he buried on his Mel O.D. subsidiary. Credited to the Vells, You'll Never Cherish a Love So True didn't even feature Martha on lead vocals, but her friend Gloria Williamson instead. Although the record sank without a trace, Gordy offered the girls a contract, but Gloria decided not to join. Martha, Rosalind Ashford, and Annette Beard, though, were all for it, so Gordy said he'd call them the Tillies. When they protested, he asked them to think up something better, and Martha, having seen Della Reese in church the previous week, came up with the Vandellas. After they recorded a couple of duds, they were hooked up with Motown's Holland Dozier Holland hit-making team, and out popped this. Come and Get These Memories did okay, but it wasn't a number one record. And in 1963, Motown was about number one records. So they went back in the studio and made one. Martha and the Vandellas spent the next year trying to recapture that magic, but Motown's attention was elsewhere. After several sound-alikes failed, Holland Dozier Holland were taken off the case, and Mickey Stevenson, Martha's old boss, was put on it. Fortunately, he had a hit in his back pocket. The summer of 1964 was a restless one, and people have claimed that Dancing in the Street was a soundtrack for rioting, but that's preposterous. It celebrated freedom to enjoy yourself, sure, but that was something black and white kids were both doing. That fall, Annette Beard left the group and was replaced by Betty Kelly, another old friend of Martha's. The new blood seemed to invigorate the group. Another hit arrived in the spring of 1966. It's no secret that Berry Gordy played favorites around Motown, and with Diana Ross around, Martha and the Vandellas were not on his A-list. After their next couple of records failed to match Nowhere to Run's popularity, he lost interest in them, and their last number one record came late in 1966. Martha wasn't finished, and she and a changing cast of Vandellas, which latterly came to include her sister Lois, continued to record through 1971, and after that, Martha made several fine records as a solo act. Her music, largely out of print, is worth seeking out, including the Motown non-hits. Maybe someday even Motown will agree with that.
Ed Ward is a writer living in Berlin.